Or, as we like to say,
the truth is always out there, sometimes way out there, with the Midweek Drive team on Siren 107.3 FM.
A date for the diary, Anna Lewis. Several dates for the diary, actually. Monday the 25th of September to Saturday the 30th of September. Do you know why that's a significant date for the diary, even if you're living in Jersey?
Is it the festival?
It is.
Something exciting happening.
Not just any festival, the Lincoln Book Festival, colon, Yay. History at its heart festival.
Oh, wow. Ooh, that sounds good.
It's official, Philip Hamlin Williams. The festival is happening, a festival which connects audiences of all ages and interests with some of the UK's best-loved historians and authors of historical fiction. Mm. Is this a case, Phil, where you think, sigh of relief, now it's all going to happen? Or are we sort of thinking, slight nervousness, slight anticipation?
It's anticipation. An awful lot of work's gone on. My colleagues who trawl through to find these books... and the speakers do a huge amount of work. And they've collected a fantastic variety this year.
Indeed. David Starkey still tent polling?
David Starkey is still there on the Wednesday at the Drill Hall. Indeed. And I'm thoroughly looking forward to that.
Well, I wanted to ensure that he was actually given full credit for that sort of things, because he's very much at that heart. When we last spoke on Inspired On Air, telephonically, I believe.
We did.
We talked about the Gothic and the way that we're sort of reaching to the cathedral and looking within that whole field. Now, Sue, Gothic, what does it mean to yourself?
Well, as you know, I'm not really... I tend to go to the
biographies.
I am, yes. When I think of Gothic, I think of Whitby and, things with fangs and...
Tessa Snart, Gothic, what does the word suggest to yourself?
Dark, gloomy, dark.
Mysterious.
Mysterious.
Ben Lewis.
I think I'd have to say the same, yeah. Mm. Although the cathedral is a Gothic cathedral.
Anna Lewis, are you sort of similarly moved to actually say Gothic? What is it?
Well, Gothic, I think, is Strawberry Hill, but it's neo-Gothic, isn't it? It's not Gothic.
You think Horace Walpole? This is
Horace Walpole. Yeah, absolutely.
We think Percy Shelley. We think the Brontes. We think of all manner of wonderful reviews.
Yeah.
We might even think of the Twilight Saga in the steampunk movement. Share with us, Philip, to the listener who might sort of think, Gothic, I don't know, I don't really like Whitby. It's not. It's in Lincoln. Why the Gothic theme?
Well, the why, so far as I'm concerned, is that it is there for anyone in Lincoln in the cathedral. It stares you in the face. But then you dig behind, and you do find all these other aspects of the Gothic, which my fellows here, and indeed in Jersey, have mentioned. You know, you have the dark. You have the mysterious, the chilling... of the 18th and 19th century novel, and indeed people in the 21st century are writing in the same genre. So you've got that. But then, of course, you do have the Strawberry Hill. In our case, you have Gilbert Scott, whose very first church is St Nick's Newport, which is a lovely Victorian building. So our festival, actually, tries to encompass... the full spectrum, and actually a bit more.
We've spoken to one of our English academic colleagues, Scott Brewster, about the line that he's taking. He's quite excited about that. It's a kind of package he's putting together with Lucy Armit, of course, his good partner, and indeed, I believe, Rebecca Styler is also keen on that. Lots of other exciting things coming through. We mentioned David Starkey, of course. He was the first headline speaker to be announced in the lineup for the Lincoln Book Festival, and... in case you're wondering, Anna, this year, 2017, we have been celebrating the 800th anniversary of the Battle of Lincoln.
Oh, wow. Gosh, that sounds quite epic.
Well, it was. I mean, I can't recall it too well at the time myself. I think I was just a young sprout at the time, but he was still there. The sort of connection within that. And, of course, the Battle of Bosworth Field, known for the car park under which Richard III actually emerged in the latter century. So good stuff there. Ben, I know you're going to be talking about the Scooter Festival this weekend, which is always very exciting. But what is this? I mean, because you spoke to Ian, of course, one of our one of the key souls in the university who's been putting things together in this Gothic festival.
Yes, I did.
Because Ben is one of the people who'll be social mediaing this whole thing, etc. So, what are your thoughts? What are you anticipating for this?
I think particularly the book festival is a good. It's almost like bringing people together through the medium of books. And whilst there's the new technology and the new tech world, people may believe there's a book decline. I still think people are very much holding on to books. I do myself, and I'm sure other people do too at my age. But I think it's a good mechanism of bringing people together and bringing a community of people to share their favourite books and their favourite stories with everyone, and everyone's able to enjoy it.
I certainly like the sound of the idea of the ancient and modern being brought together. And certainly, Twilight is one of the series that is really it's very very up and coming young readers type. I mean, normally you think of Mary Shelley and things like that. You're sort of thinking of an older reader perhaps, but it's nice to see that though the old and the new are being brought together in such a way.
And we've got the young writers. Mm. I mentioned last time our flash fiction competition.
How did that go?
It's unbelievable.
You see, that's what Siren can do for you.
There's talent out there.
We have had a fabulous number of entries. 150 came from just one school.
Oh, gosh.
Now, that is exciting. That is a lot of young people. Really getting stuck into this.
And
I can't wait to
remind us the flash fiction. It was the rubrics and the constraints were, what do they have to be?
So you had to write this piece in exactly 50 words. Very difficult.
Ooh. That's a tall order.
It is indeed.
Story in 50 words, Alan.
In 50 words.
A short story.
Exactly.
Very short.
But how fantastic that you've got 150 people from just children from just one school that are engaging with that. That's
absolutely
brilliant.
But not just, and there are other schools and members of the general public.
So
which is
are we
great.
Talking the high side of 1,000 then?
Oh, no. We're talking under 500.
That's still quite a lot of judging to go.
It's a lot of shortlisting and judging.
How would you start, Anna? What would your advice be in terms of judging that amount of quality that's coming through on the system? Would you actually say, well, we start at the top of these stairs and we throw them all down the stairs, and the ones at the bottom we sort of discard them out? Share with us. What would you do?
Well, I heard a terrible story once. Met someone on a train who said that somehow if you wrote in ink rather than sent something by a computer, it would give a totally different impression to the person receiving it. So, if somebody wrote their story out without actually typing it up, would it be less valuable or less merit-worthy? And the trouble that people take writing these days in terms of pen and ink is much more kind of meaningful than just typing away. I think, I don't know, I'm an old-fashioned gal and I remember doing my dissertation on an old word processor. But... would they accept, for example, rather than a typewritten story or work rather than a handwritten one? Because, that's something to
consider. Were handwritten stories acceptable?
We've had loads of handwritten.
Okay.
Now, we asked, obviously, for it to be online because that's easiest.
Yes,
But we received handwritten. Now, that reminds me, when I used to work at the cathedral, my deputy... when she was recruited, always insisted on a handwritten application form.
Oh. Really?
Because you can see so much in handwriting.
You've got the characteristics, you've got the graphology, you can sort out the potential sociopaths from the people. It's amazing.
No, in blood or anything like that.
No. Crayon, I find, is always
I'm definitely with you, Anna. Particularly now, there's a craft to writing with your own hand. It's not as simple as punching things out on a typewriter. That there has to be an element of thought and care, because once you've got that down on paper in ink, you can't take it back again unless you put a line through it and start again. So you
don't really have to think. If you go to the British Library and you look at the turning the pages thing, what you're not just looking for is the text of, say, Dickens' writing Great Expectations. You want to see the thought process, and often the handwriting and the crossings out and the drafting. It shows you part of the thought process. It's a very engaging thing for a reader to see an annotated book rather than a clean copy. Mm. I mean, I love annotated books secondhand because it shows that someone's actually read the book. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Someone's actually dialogued with the book and they haven't just read it and it's just gone through their head and that's it.
I don't know about you, Anna, but I'm certainly a sucker for handwriting. I love handwriting. There are some people's handwriting that I could sit and I could read. It doesn't matter necessarily the content of it, but I could sit and read that page again and again and again, just because the cursiveness of that and the shape of the letters. There's just something about it. It's your personality on paper.
It's true.
Because the trouble is with some of us, you have to read that page again and again and again to work out
what it's saying.
The scribbly hand is trying to say.
Doctor's handwriting type thing. Mm-hmm.
It's something which you maybe have to offset in the cost-benefit scenario. Astoundingly, we've reached the end of this first introductory piece of the programme before we go off to William Coles to find out whereabouts in Staffordshire. I think it's Staffordshire. It could be Stoke-on-Trent, which, of course, is in Staffordshire, I think, where he actually happens to be. He was in Wales last week. But, Ben, would you like to put those last two questions to Anna Lewis, please?
Anna, have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us today on the show?
I have. Thank you very much for asking me.
That's all right. And will you be with us again soon?
I would love to. Thanks for the offer.
Indeed, from a different studio, but still the voices of Anna Lewis. Voices. It's not as though she's possessed, not like Joan of Arc. She will be back with us probably similar time next week. No, week after. It's very confusing, this time thing. Meanwhile, back with the Goths. exactly are you, William Coles, in this fair land of ours, having left Scotland and therefore been partly responsible for Andy Murray being knocked out of England's Wimbledon event? Where exactly are you now?
I'm in Stoke-on-Trent on the Trent and Mersey Canal.
Marvellous. Now, last week, of course, when we endeavoured to reach you via Skype, it was a pointless exercise because you happened to be where?
That one? Where on earth was I that time? Where? Darkest Hampshire, I think, that time. Yes, in the woods. Sorry.
If you're into Darkest Hampshire, there's no point trying to actually reach any radio station whatsoever. Only kidding, Hampshire people. It's a wonderful world out there. And if you'd like to attend the Lincoln Book Festival, I'm sure Philip Hamlin Williams would be delighted to welcome folk from Hampshire as well.
Very much so. Last year, we had someone who came for the whole week.
Really? From Hampshire?
Really?
Can't remember where but it was certainly staying in Lincoln, coming to Lincoln specifically to attend every day of the festival.
This, of course, William, is the Lincoln Book Festival, History at its Heart, which you can purchase tickets from the lincolndrillhall.com and indeed see a whole range of things, although sadly no William Coles, primarily because William hasn't really written a historical novel. But
I've written one, maybe two historical novels.
Actually, you're right, William.
Yeah, I mean, Lord Lucan and that World War II stuff. I mean, yes. Does that qualify or is it going to be a bit older than that?
Well, Lord Lucan, not necessarily Gothic, although you'd have to stretch it a wee bit.
Well, this year's Gothic. Last year we had some World War II stuff.
Yeah. I'll be in there then.
And who knows what we'll have next year.
Exactly. William, would you like to put some questions to Philip Hamlin Williams about the authentic History at its Heart Lincoln Book Festival, which effectively has history at its heart because of its Roman remains, that's of the city, not the festival, the Norman Castle, the Gothic Cathedral, and indeed the city's origins of Lincoln, where you've actually brought your very own shark teeth, William, in times past, actually sort of refer to Lindum Colonia, an influential role in English history. In fact, I believe that this used to be England's biggest port, did it not be, back in the day in the Lindum periods?
It was certainly a significant one.
Yes, yeah. Significant port.
So who are the biggest names coming along to the book festival?
Well, we have, as we've mentioned earlier, we have David Starkey, who's coming to talk.
Oh, David, right. That's a coup.
And he's coming to talk about the military success of the Battle of Bosworth, but also that it was a notable victory in a propaganda war. This is good Starkey territory, and I really look forward to it.
I mean, David Starkey. I mean, Tessa, are you a David Starkey fan? Is it? Yeah. I find him mildly preferable to Hilary Mantel, who irritates me. I'll be honest. You know, Hilary, I find irritating. I just do. I think she goes too far with trying to look like Anne Boleyn. It's just let it go, Hilary. You know, it's a step too far on that one. But David Starkey's kind of. I mean, he could irritate, but he's transcendent. That I feel now. He's now actually sort of, he's got quite some insightful lines.
Oh, very much so.
Which is good. So a thumbs up from that. Who else?
So the other, if I sort of go in terms of who we're releasing next, mm-hmm. Alison
from
Weir.
Mm-hmm.
Alison Weir and Sarah Gristwood are going to be talking about queens and power. Mm-hmm. Alison Weir, forthcoming book called Queens of the Conquest, and Sarah's more last book, The Game of Queens. And they're going to be exploring this idea of powerful women in our history. And, of course, there are a lot of them, and they're very interesting.
We've got Boudica, we've got, obviously, the six wives of Henry, we've got Elizabeth, and we've got many, many more. Florence Nightingale, presumably.
Let's not forget Lincoln's very own Nicola de la Hoya.
Absolutely.
We have a building named after her. What more could you ask for?
We do, and I'm wearing the badge.
People used to come to Lincoln, William, and say, where's the Nicola de Hoya building? We had to say it's the architecture building. You know.
Can I ask an impish question about this book festival? Mm. I've been to a lot of gigs in Edinburgh, the Edinburgh Book Fest, and it seems to me that a lot of writers are brilliant at writing, but they're quite introverted, and they're absolutely useless at talking about their books, and they're even worse at actually reading from their books. What about getting professional readers in to read for these people?
Well, we discourage them from reading. Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
The written word spoken, yes, to my mind, doesn't work.
Unless you've got a true artiste who can lift the words
absolutely
off the page.
So what we like to do is to get our author to talk about their book, or more often, to be in conversation with someone.
A standard strategy I have employed many a time myself,
And we think that works well. Mm. We have, in the years I've been involved, had some memorable evenings of writers who've come along and really...
crucified their work. Self-immolation, literally. Self-immolation on the basis of, for goodness sakes, please, there's got to be some pitch, pace, pause and power if you're using some oration for the whole routine. Do you want people to buy this stuff or what? Sorry, I'm venting again, Philip.
You are. The one, you know, one I remember, Susan Fletcher from last year, she had people eating out of her hand as she was talking about her wonderful book on Van Gogh. And you do get some absolutely glorious evenings.
Yes.
And was there do you occasionally have to shut them up, though, and say, no, we've had enough of this?
Well,
you're being boring.
The worst occasion we had, we always try to have a session for local authors. And I think it was 2 years ago, one who will remain nameless went on and on and on.
So what did you do?
Well, I wasn't there on that occasion, so it is apocryphal.
It's rather like having a tutor who continually speaks at the same old level and doesn't actually vary the delivery in any way, shape or form, so you actually just lose the will to live as you're listening to it continually. Yeah, it's not worth it, it's honestly is. Tessa, any thoughts from yourself for either William in Stoke? William of Stoke, that has a sort of ring to it, a kind of historical scenario. You should conquer something whilst you're over in Stoke-on-Trent, William. You know, so declare some sort of independence for Stoke. They need it, honestly.
I was going to add to the book festival. What would you say to people that maybe see it advertised and probably think, oh, I'm not going to go, I'll give it a miss? Maybe there's people that wouldn't consider
students
going.
Students of the University of Lincoln,
yeah,
for instance.
Perhaps.
First week back. What
would
are
you
they
say
do
to those?
Well, I would say, well, think what bit of Gothic you enjoy, and then come along on Thursday. And I'm saying Thursday because it has the sort of the classic modern Gothic novel called Bellman and Black by Diane Setterfield, and it is your Susan Hill ghost story. So if you like that sort of thing, come to that. And before that, you'll have listened to Catherine Hughes. Now, she is a biographer, but she is looking at tales of flesh in the age of decorum. So her book, Victorians Undone, reveals much more what
saucy,
it was...
Saucy, scandalous, well, shenanigans.
You know, what it was like to be a 19th century man or woman. Through a close examination of five famous, controversial or curious Victorian body parts.
Yeah. Oh, and okay, we all know, William, that Victorians and their body parts, it's unmissable, quite frankly. You just have to look at BBC scheduling.
So you say.
Victorian Ben. Is embarrassing bodies, isn't it?
It is.
There you go.
It's
everybody
a
loves that show as well, exactly. Embarrassing bodies. So. So there's something for everybody, really. Even if you're not into, like, you're not a full bookworm or you don't read often, this really brings the books alive.
Well, that's what we wanted.
Yeah.
Book festivals are often, you know, pretty frightening. You know, you're a bit worried.
All those books? You're just an English undergraduate.
I'm intrigued already.
You know, frightening.
But dry, yes.
So look, you know, what interests you and go along. You know, if you love architecture, which I do, Saturday afternoon rather, is for you. They're going to be looking at Gilbert Scott's architecture. So you could do that. You can look at David Starkey, or Tuesday, if art and painting is your thing, find the real story behind the Mona Lisa.
See, that's interesting. Yeah,
it's enigmatic, like the smile.
Or if you think of your Pre-Raphaelites, rather than thinking of the artists themselves, what about their models? Mm. What about those ladies in bathtubs? What was their story? And we have Kirsty Sternell Walker Phillips' book about that.
Study on, Philip. I think we can only sort of have so much excitement when the time comes around to 27 minutes past five on a Wednesday afternoon. Remember, William has young children. You can't go too far down those ladies in bathtubs. It's going to be a whole different line. William, does that answer your questions in terms of why the 2017 Lincoln Book Festival is just going to be absolutely amazing?
Yes, I mean, I'm sure it's going to be amazing. It's going to be fantastic. How often, actually, do you either enrage the authors or do they burst into tears? Does that happen much?
I can tell you speak from experience here, William.
I don't
recall, I can be enraged.
I don't recall tears. Mm-hmm. I can recall a certain annoyance, and that was in conversation.
What had you done to annoy the author?
Well, it wasn't me. It was, I think, someone was pushing him rather on the point he was trying to make. Well, that's fine. You know, that's what conversation is.
Yeah. I love the way, Philip, you denied everything there. So it wasn't me. It is great. Wonderful.
Well, that's the beauty of being the chair.
The chair, exactly.
You don't do anything.
No, neutral, exactly. It's essential. Fulfil the role. Tessa, would you like to put those last two questions to William Coles as we sort of say farewell to him on his barge somewhere in Stoke?
Narrowboat, please.
Thank you. Yes.
Don't get too mixed up.
Honestly.
William, have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us today?
I have loved it. I'm only sorry that I can't be in Lincoln this week. It's obviously the place to be.
Well,
it is.
Oh, Newark, that's Saturday. There's a book festival going on there, which we'll be covering, so that's all good from that perspective. And Ben, why is William going to miss out on the Scooter Festival that takes place this weekend?
Were you a mod or a rocker, William?
I'm afraid I'd be a mod.
Oh, OK, no, that's perfect. Well, the Scooter Festival in Lincoln this weekend is taking place, an all-charity event.
Oh, wow.
And it's hundreds of scooters from all over the country going to be gathering along the Braithwaite waterfront and doing a ride around Lincoln.
It's going to be like Quadrophenia for the East
exactly
Midlands.
That.
It's going to be phenomenal.
Or Brighton Rock.
Exactly.
They do make a beautiful sight. I remember I went last year and it was stunning. Yeah. That entire waterfront was from top to bottom was all beautiful, sparkling scooters.
And if she hadn't been attending a birthday party, she'd be there again this year.
I would.
There we are.
What is the collective noun for a load of scooter drivers?
Is it Scootai? I don't know. I don't know what.
There's got to be some sort of scooter scenario there. Then we'll find out more about that as Ben will drop it in during the course of the programme. Before we head off to Seymour Quigley, real name, he's going to be talking about The Sound of Sugartown and the Wilsons, if it wasn't so soon. But the final question, of course, is...
Will you be returning to the show again soon?
Just as soon as you ask me. Thank you so much for having me.
As God is my witness, I would do it again. If the wind was behind me, and if it weren't for this rain, if the month was on Sundays and the nights of the moon, you know I'd be there for you if it wasn't so soon. We'll be right back.
course, earlier in July, specifically on Friday the 7th of July, the world gave thanks for the fact that This Is the Sound of Sugartown Volume 2 was released unto the masses, and we've been celebrating ever since. Haven't we, Seymour Quigley?
We have. Yeah. It's been it takes a long time to get a vinyl compilation together now, because it takes a long time to get it printed. So we started putting this together about 9 months ago, I think. So it's brilliant to see it finally... To see it finally out there, and to hold it in my hands, and feel that it's something that's real and happening.
Genuine, tangible vinyl. It's wonderful.
Yes, there's something about vinyl, isn't there? When you hold a bit of vinyl with your band's music on for the first time, it's certainly for me, it was the first time I felt that I really was in a band, was when I held a piece of vinyl. So it has got that magic.
So talk to us about the Wilsons, If It Wasn't So-So, which is what we were just listening to.
The Wilsons are that wonderful thing of a band who were all in different bands, but all drank at the same pub, and over some real ales one evening, someone asked the question, "Well, why don't we form a band?" And that must have been, I think, they've been going for a long time. Of all the Brace and Evans bands, they're one of the bands that have been together for the longest, purely because for them it's something they do on a Friday and Saturday night. They go and play any bar, any wedding, anything that anyone offers them, and they absolutely love what they do. I mean, it's an incongruous thing, a band from Suffolk playing Americana, but they do it fantastically well, and they've got a good sense of humour as well. And live, they're wonderful, because their singer Ian is a very funny guy, and so you get a mixture of a dreadfully inappropriate stand-up and joyful Americana tunes when you see them live. So yeah, they're wonderful. But they the Sound of Sugartown LP, I think, sort of demonstrates that Bury St Edmunds doesn't really have, it's an ironic title, it doesn't really have a particular sound. But there are lots of bands who all like each other and all play together, but don't try and sound like each other. So they're a great example of why it's a nice little scene.
Well, the classic line, of course, Bury St Edmunds, and why haven't they yet? Sorry. I've used it many a time, and it still actually sinks like a stone. The great news about This Is the Sound of Sugartown, of course, is it's also being sold to help a charity. Would you like to tell us more about the sales going to actually help a mental health charity in particular?
Yeah, well, we thought it'd be nice to do something that would help a local charity. And the last time when we did Volume 1 of the compilation, it was to raise money for our local women's refuge, which has had its funding cut. And this time, we thought it'd be nice to do it for a mental health charity, because mental health issues affect a lot of people, either directly or indirectly. Everyone knows someone who's struggled with mental health problems. And as you can imagine, with any music scene, there'll be plenty of tales of struggling. And for a lot of people, music is something that helps them to overcome mental health problems. So we thought it'd be nice to support this local charity. So they're called Julian Support, and they work alongside people whose mental health problems have got so bad that they've lost their independence, and they help people to rebuild their lives, often from the ground up. So there's a lot of one-to-one support. They have a residential facility as well in Bury St Edmunds for people, and it's a great thing to be part of. And one of the bands on Volume 1, called the Machismos, their singing drummer actually works for Julian Support. And the mother of the drummer in my band works for Julian Support. So there are direct links there as well. They do a lot of great work in the town, and we thought it'd be nice to help them.
The connectivity is wonderful. Now, you've been listening to the programme online. You presumably, just a reminder for our listener as well, that we actually have from the Lincoln Book Festival, Philip Hamlin-Williams, we have Sue Royce, we have Ben Lewis and Tessa Snart in the studio. And Ben, of course, talking about the Scooter Festival. I was just thinking, actually, the Wilson Sound would make a really good scooter-based number, really, actually, in terms of backdrop, if you were doing a video of the Scooter Festival.
Yeah, well, there's quite a few songs you could obviously include from films.
And but only, we're just talking about This Is the Sound of the Sugartown, obviously, of this particular film, because that's the only song that really it matters. But Seymour, any questions you'd like to put to any of the team at this stage?
Well, actually, I'm quite interested, just generally, because I've never been to Lincoln. And it's interesting that you've picked up on what we're doing over in Bury St Edmunds. Yeah. And the question I always ask anyone from any town is, what's what happens in your town that's really exciting, and what how's your local DIY music scene? Is it exciting, and who should we be listening to?
Sue is somebody who's born in Skegness. You're probably best qualified to actually answer this.
Actually, our music scene is pretty good. We have a lot of the pubs and bars in the city that foster those links with local live bands, and there is an eclectic mix right through from your rock, your metal, right through to your acoustic folky. There's something for everybody. So if you're into to tasting lots of different music, then I think a night out here would be just up your street.
that's good to know. I mean, it's really I feel personally, and part of the reason why we put together the Sugar Town compilation is that I think there's talent everywhere. And traditionally, you felt that you had to go to London or Manchester or, one of the cool cities to make things happen. But I think we're seeing pockets all around the UK of scenes developing and people realising you don't necessarily have to leave your hometown but for something interesting to happen. Yeah. And it'd be lovely. I think particularly because as London gets less affordable for ordinary people, I think we're going to see the future of rock and roll happening in all over the place, in all different towns, all different cities, and maybe it's time we've got a Bury St Edmunds Lincoln link happening.
This could be critical stuff, Tessa. I mean, you are the guru behind Sound and Country Vision these days. We talk about country, not country. What questions or thoughts do you have for Seymour?
Well, I heard a lot of influences in your music, and so did Sue.
I did, yes.
You heard the Beatles, didn't you? And I even thought maybe a bit of Beach Boys. Who are your influences? Who did you listen to growing up? And has that been the inspiration behind your songs?
Well, my band are Course Party. They're very, very different to the Wilsons, but I think. A strong thread that seems to be with all the bands and various members is that we all seem to like The Clash, and everyone seems to be aware of Factory Records and Creation Records. There's kind of strong DIY labels that of people who had nothing, so therefore they had nothing to lose. If you feel like no one's watching, then just do it yourself. And if you stick with what you believe in and what you're passionate about, eventually you can make good things happen. And I think that despite the fact that we've all got all the bands in Bury sound different to each other, I think what we all have in common is that love of the kind of punk ethic of just go for it. And there are no rules, just go for it, see what happens. And if we all work together, things will change for the better. And I think that's... I think that's the kind of biggest influence for me. Probably, yeah, The Clash, Factory Records, Creation Records, and the Riot Girl scene that happened over in America in the early 90s, where people did things on their own terms and changed the world for the better. So that's supposed to be a long-winded answer, but.
It's value for money. That's what we expect. Value for money for the whole thing. It's always good. Philip, any thoughts from yourself?
Not in terms of questions, but in terms of what Lincoln offers.
Yes.
I now grab my Lincoln Drill Hall hat.
Nice.
And I mention that every Saturday we have live music at lunchtime, which right through the year, a whole variety. Mm. Now, the other thing we do is we're the place where the Half-Bake Scratch Night takes place.
The Half-Bake Scratch Night, Seymour.
And this is where, artists of all genres come together and they try out what they've been working on in front of their peers. And that's great.
It's opening up a whole range of things. Tessa?
That's a good point. When you're maybe writing music or you've got an idea, do you show it in front of all your family or friends, or is it something you work on until you really know that it's something special or you're happy with it?
I think with when I've been making music and bands that I've been in, we tend to do things behind closed doors and then just go for it at a gig and see how it goes down well. With Horse Party, when we were writing our second album, we did play things to Ellie, the singer's mum and dad. We'd set up a kind of stripped back line in the front room and play stuff in front of them while they watched telly and did knitting and stuff. So it was a there was a little bit of that, but generally speaking, you just kind of go for it in front of a mean, I run a club night in Brecon called Washing Machine, and I've been doing it for about 5 years now. And it's a not genre specific night. We'll have any local bands of any genre of any age, even if it's their first gig and they've got three songs, they can come and play. So we always try and get a more experienced band headlining. And then first on, we'll try and give, if possible, someone who's never played before, because then it's aspirational. You know, you're playing in front of your peers, you're seeing how the other bands do it, and that, you know, as long as you have that, as long as you have some kind of show, you know, platform, bands will form and continue to form. And it sounds like that's what you guys do in Lincoln as well. And that is the way to build a scene, to give people a platform and make them feel that their contribution, that what they're doing, no matter how primitive, is valid. And that there's a point to them doing it. And I think that's how scenes grow and how great stuff can happen.
In the words of Mick Elliott, I would say keep music live.
Absolutely.
And I always feel it's important to actually deal with the knitters, of whom there's a growing number. I mean, Tessa will take up knitting one of these days when
one
she actually
these days with that
very trendy. It's very Derry Girl knitting.
Exactly. I used to be able to.
You've got the knitters,
it,
you've got the guillotine. Oh, no, that's a different kind of knitters. Never mind. Seymour, it's been wonderful touching base with your good self. This is The Sound of Sugartown, Volume 2, is out now. People can access The Sound of Sugartown clearly from Facebook. Are there any other sites you'd like to share with us in terms of where people should go to find out further details?
Yep, well, it comes out, it's out through a Cambridge label called Repeat Records, mm-hmm. Fantastic. And it's repeatfanzine.bandcamp.com. You can mail order it from there, but it's in record shops as well. You can buy the Delicious Vinyl from all good record shops.
Mate, record shops, who would have thought they
still exist? There really is something about vinyl. Just to, you know, you can handle it, you can
melt
smell it
into
it,
a shaking ashtray, manner of wonder. You can scratch it, you can you can set it up at 33 1/3 or 45 or even higher. Meanwhile, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme this evening? Seymour, has it been okay for you?
It's been fantastic. I would recommend the experience highly to anyone. So thank you.
That's pretty good indeed, as we begin to head off to Luigi from the band Matinee, who's talking about a whole variety of other factors. But the next crucial question is, will you return, Seymour?
I would, absolutely. Any time you want me to talk about anything, really.
Well, so, cue the clash.